Drought-stricken areas anxiously await the arrival of rain. Full recovery of the ecosystem, however, can extend long past the first raindrops hit the thirsty ground. We certainly know all about that in California and here in southern Oregon as well. There's a new study that is out. It was published, I believe, this week. On the line with us today is William Anderegg, an assistant professor of biology at the University of Utah, who participated in this survey. William, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what prompted your group to do this study.
Sure. So I think a lot of it came back to the early 2000s drought in the western U.S. So there was a pretty severe drought, especially in the Four Corner states, from 2000 to 2003 or so. And we were starting to see in our research, even as far along as 2008 or 2009, that you could actually see some of the damage of that drought in a lot of the trees. And we started to realize that even though the drought itself, in terms of rainfall, was over, that the ecosystems and the trees still hadn't recovered. So we first went and looked at it in tree rings that leave a really nice record of how much trees grow every year, and we saw that indeed, it took a couple years for most trees in the U.S., especially the West, to recover. And then this current study, we really wanted to go global, so we turned to satellites and wanted to look at this this question of how long it takes things to recover across the globe.
Well, here in southern Oregon and, of course, across California, multi-year drought that we had to go through, we're seeing some recovery. We've had a pretty good winter and spring with some heavy rain. Of course, summers in our area are very dry. Have you specifically taken a look at California or Oregon in your studies?
You know, that's a great question. Because we're using satellites that see everywhere on the globe, we do cover California and Oregon. But unfortunately, the latest time series, I think, ends in about 2015, so it wouldn't actually really cover much of the recovery period yet. We'll get some of the drought effects, but not the recovery.
This morning, we're speaking with William Anderegg, an assistant professor of biology at the University of Utah. There have been some efforts by his team to look at the recovery from drought and how difficult that is for some areas. We'll talk about that in a moment. If you'd like to join the Jefferson Exchange and have a question this morning, you can call us toll-free at 800-838-3760 or send us an email question at jx@jeffnet.org. There's multiple definitions of droughts, isn't there?
There is. That's part of the disconnect here, is that meteorologists tend to think of drought in terms of rainfall mostly and to some degree temperature, whereas farmers have kind of a different set of metrics. That matters a lot more about things like soil moisture. Water planners have still another set on lake levels and stream flow. For ecosystems, it tends to matter a lot more along the lines of crops and agriculture, that you want to know when the soil moisture has recovered and the things that affect plants, but also when the plant function has recovered. Are they kind of back to functioning as they were before the drought? And so that's kind of the focus of this study, is can we define when a drought ends from a plant's point of view?
As you looked at different places around the world and used satellite technology, which I find interesting, I didn't think about using satellites to determine how strong a drought might be. What are some of the bigger challenges worldwide? Where are places that have a more difficult time recovering from a drought?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, we tended to see the areas that struggled the most to recover from a drought being in the really high latitudes up in the boreal forests, say up in Canada and Russia, and then also some of the tropical forests, especially across Indonesia and into the Amazon. Those seem to be the areas that had the longest drought recovery periods across the globe.
Tell me a little bit about, I was reading about the, I guess you call it the Standardized Precipitation Evaporation Index. That has a lot to do with the plants, doesn't it?
It does. So the whole concept of this study is you use you use some drought index to figure out where on Earth's surface and when we think a drought is occurring. And then you go to the satellites and you look at, okay, how much did photosynthesis go down and when did it recover in those areas? To think about a drought metric, we used one of these, it's one of these agricultural drought metrics, and it takes into account both the precipitation that falls and the evaporation from the land and from the plant that happens. And that's a very, that's sensitive to humidity and temperature both. So this standardized index factors in both of those pieces of drought, both the precipitation and the evaporation, and then it does so in kind of a comparable way across Earth's surface.
Recently in California, there was a debate about almonds, and they went from being good to bad to good, I think, over the course of the debate. If I remember correctly, it was something like a gallon of water to grow one almond. And, you know, is that part of the consideration of where we have crops? Just because you can grow a crop in an area, is that necessarily a good thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that's a question we all have to grapple with and answer, and I don't have any special answers. What we do know, and this is, you know, is kind of what was discussed in this almond debate, is that some plants need a lot more water than others. And for natural ecosystems, that just determines where they can survive and where they can't, right? The tropical rainforests live in the tropics because there's a lot of water there. But for croplands, you know, you've got to irrigate to kind of buffer and add that extra water if you want those plants to live there. And whether that's worth doing from a societal point of view is, I think, something we all got to figure out.
Well, a lot of us love almonds, I can say that.
I do too, indeed. So do my kids.
In your research, you a little item here I saw called the double whammy. What is the double whammy?
Yeah, that's one of the big motivations of this study. So one of the big things we expect with future climate change is more frequent and more severe droughts, especially here in the West. And the concern is if droughts are coming more often and it takes years for an ecosystem to recover from one drought, that before the plants have all recovered, you could have a second drought hit. And that double whammy where the droughts hit quicker than plants can recover, we think is a pretty large concern for actually having an ecosystem crash and, say, having widespread forests die off. That's kind of the big concern is can things kind of get back to normal and get buffered again before the next drought hits?
What are some of the ways, you know, speaking of that, that if you have one of these double whammies, what are the ways that plants or trees, any kind of vegetation is permanently damaged? What's happening when that occurs?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that happen, and you some of these you can kind of see as you walk out on the landscape. So the first and the most obvious thing to do is to kind of prune back and shed leaves and come up with sort of a more sparse canopy that's going to lose less water. Some trees, like junipers, tend to do it just by losing whole branches and kind of cutting off part of the tree, but a lot of trees will just put out smaller and fewer leaves. That's a positive form of response, but it's going to lead to lower photosynthesis and lower production of the plant in the future. The other main way that we think plants get damaged is really this loss of the water transport system in plants. So you can think of it that especially all plants, but especially trees, are like these straws that are sucking water from the soil up to their leaves. During a drought, you can have tiny air bubbles called embolisms shoot in and interrupt these pipes inside plants. That's a type of damage that's pretty hard to repair, and if enough of it happens, that tends to be how trees die.
If you have a large forest area that's highly impacted by this, and as you said, smaller leaves and reducing photosynthesis, this kind of is a spiral that contributes into concerns about climate change, isn't it?
It is. One of the big questions is what's going to be the fate of forests in a changing climate and ecosystems broadly, let's say plants. And rising CO2 concentrations are certainly going to help plants, but the concern is that the impacts of drought and temperature might swamp those benefits. And indeed, if plants start to die off and grow less, then they're taking up less carbon from the atmosphere, and that would accelerate climate change. So that's a big concern and something that we and others are kind of racing to understand and to predict.
From the satellite imagery you've looked at over large areas of vegetation, are you seeing that right now?
Well, so the good news is globally, you still see plants growing more than they are dying on average. That is, there are kind of enough areas that are getting greener that it tends to outweigh the areas that are dying and getting brown. That said, we're starting to see warning signs from really critical places that are you could call it they're ringing alarm bells. So we're starting to see large-scale droughts in the Amazon rainforest, for example, that stores huge amounts of carbon, and that we're picking up signs that those are starting to maybe turn the corner and head more towards a browning. So right now the trend is still good. More things are greening, but there's certainly some warning signs.
We're speaking this morning with William Anderegg, Assistant Professor of Biology at the University of Utah. They've been studying drought and the recovery from drought that happens around the world. If you have a question that you'd like to ask about drought, we've certainly seen that here in our region in the past few years. You can call the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Are we starting to consider drought recovery time, or is it a little too early for a change in public policy?
You know, right now I think it's kind of at the early stages. It's one of the things that we learned, and I think this is good news for this recent drought in California, is that obviously the weather after drought matters a lot. And so having a wet period after a drought it's going to be really helpful to helping ecosystems and plants recover. Now, in terms of a policy sort of thing, I think the big point we want to make is that we have to think of drought recovery as part of the big picture of what plants are going to be resilient and tolerant to drought in a future climate. And that's where I think there's some efforts underway to start kind of planning and proactively prepping for more drought. But we're still in the early stages.
Other than rain, a natural process, are there things that we as people can do, like, I don't know if this applies or not, but say crop rotation or during the drought here in Southern Oregon, there was a move for some people to put in drought-resistant grasses and plants or go back to native-type plants for this area that didn't require as much water. Are those things in play?
You know, I think they are. That certainly leaning towards or prioritizing more drought-resistant plants is a really smart strategy. If we're thinking about, say, public lands and these large-scale forests, for example, there, the best sorts of things you can do are try to kind of come up with a healthy fire regime and make sure that maybe the forests aren't too densely packed. We've learned in a lot of western U.S. forests that largely due to fire suppression, things are kind of overpacked and overcrowded relative to what they used to be. And that will have a pretty large effect for drought tolerance as well, that a kind of more healthily set up ecosystem will be more drought resistant.
As the drought went on multiple years out here in California and Southern Oregon, people were encouraged to practice conservation. And there's some indication that worked really well, especially in California. Are people good after the crisis is over, or do we go back to just wasting? How are we as human beings? Maybe this isn't your expertise, but how are we as human beings at conservation after drought's over?
Yeah, you know, this isn't my direct area of study, but my general sense is that we tend to have a fairly short memory on these things. That we at least I know I personally, once the drought is over, you know, tend to think less about it, even though it's something that I study. I think that's probably something we'll have to ask some other scientists, but I think we tend to have a short memory.
And we tend to think that things have recovered pretty quickly. I mean, I guess this goes back to your difference in the three different definitions of drought. Certainly, you know, everybody's cheering because the drought maps that come out show that Southern Oregon and California have improved greatly with
right.
the recent rains that we've had. So people are probably assuming, you know, hooray, it's over. We don't have to worry about it for a while.
Right.
So in your definitions of drought, are you going to work primarily with meteorologists or people in agriculture or hydrological type folks in order to try to make some improvement? What's your next step after this study?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we do work with those folks fairly frequently, and because we're really focused on drought in the West, some of our next steps is to really try to take some of this knowledge of both drought and how plants work and kind of build it into some computer models that we could actually maybe make some forecasts for, say, the western U.S. and try to identify which regions are going to be the most vulnerable to drought in the future, which regions will have this double whammy effect. And so the plan is to really try to look forward into the future with what we've learned now.
On the line is Ryan from Eugene and has a question about the drought. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, hi, good morning. I wonder about Coast Range and sort of the monoculture of forest trees that are being replanted when we replant forests that may have been selected for different climate. Because I'm driving through often the Oregon Coast Range and seeing a lot of Douglas fir trees dying. And I know that you're just coming out of drought, but, you know, how much is that a worry?
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, that's actually a pretty large worry that, one, we might be planting the wrong trees in the wrong places, especially because we're, in many cases, not kind of actively looking forward towards the future and what the future climate's going to look like. In planning what we're going to plant. And I think you also touched on something else, which is this monoculture idea, which one of the things we're learning is that in most forests, having a diversity of a couple different types of species at least seems to kind of buffer you quite a bit better. And so we think that more having forests with a couple of different species are probably going to be a lot more resilient to drought in the future than a single monoculture.
Thank you.
Is there an effort to try to encourage people not to go with monoculture?
You know, I think there's a little bit of understanding building. I actually don't have much of a sense if people are starting to plant more polycultures. That's probably a good question for the foresters. But right now, my sense is that there's not too much done on that.
The definitions of drought, and we talked about that a little bit, trying to assess this. You used the global satellite data. Are you out in the field also doing some measuring?
Yeah, we do a lot of work, particularly in the Rockies in Colorado and Utah. But we do a lot of work on the forests in the Rockies, and we go out and we measure things about the soil and the weather data, but also take measurements of the plant physiology and assess kind of how much stress are plants under, how well can they pipe water around, things like that.
As you look at a post-drought situation, what are your criteria for declaring that an area is healthy and has returned to its pre-drought status?
Yeah, so typically we've used two criteria. One is either the growth of the system, the growth, say, in the tree rings or in the diameter of trees, is recovered to the average value before the drought. The other we've used, especially from the satellite point of view, is basically a measurement of the photosynthesis. How green is the area, and is that greenness kind of recovered to what it was pre-drought? On a more detailed level, we actually do look at some of the pipes I was talking about inside trees, and we can with them kind of assess how well has that water transport system recovered too.
So are we seeing a shorter period of time between drought events, especially in the western United States, as a result of climate change?
Yeah, we are. And the West is one of the areas that's really expected to dry down in the future. And it's not, what's interesting here is it's not necessarily a rainfall signal, more than really a temperature signal. And what's going on here is that warmer temperatures tend to suck water out of the soil and the plants and evaporate a lot more water quickly. And so even with kind of the same rainfall, you can get more frequent droughts as temperatures go up.
You have drier conditions in Utah than we generally do in, well, at least parts of Oregon, north of where we're at. We're pretty dry in southern Oregon, more like a California climate. How's that impacting across your part of the western U.S.?
Yeah, you know, we've been taking some measurements this summer, and this is one of these interesting time stories, is that right now it seems that it's not too bad here in terms of a drought, although I was just in Colorado earlier this summer, and we're actually starting to see more trees start to die. And it's not actually, my sense is we're still cranking the numbers, but it's not this summer that's causing the trees to die, is kind of the accumulated of stresses, especially from the 2012 drought that kind of struck a lot of the country.
We've seen around our area, around Crater Lake, for example, some bark beetles that have attacked the trees. In drought situations, are they more vulnerable? The vegetation becomes more vulnerable to diseases and attacks from things like beetles?
Yeah, that's right. You know, that a lot of the drought impacts, and especially when trees die, tend to come along with beetles, that the beetles attack in greater numbers, and the trees are more vulnerable during drought. And so I think both in Oregon and California, it's kind of a 1-2 punch, that the drought really stresses the trees, and then the beetles move in for the final kill.
We've been speaking this morning with William Anderegg. He's an assistant professor of biology at the University of Utah. Along with his team, they've been looking at recovery from drought and how that varies across the world, and especially here in the United States. William Anderegg, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.